Lots of big world leaders got together recently in Davos, Switzerland, to talk about big world issues at the World Economic Forum. Oregon State University had a presence there, too, as part of a newly formed group aimed at addressing issues where water and international relations intersect. OSU is one of just a handful of charter members of the university's Partnerships for Water Cooperation and Diplomacy. Let's get into what that collective is set up to do and what role OSU might play. Aaron Wolf is a professor of geography, environmental sciences, and marine resource management at Oregon State and our guest on the exchange. Dr. Wolf, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Jeffrey.
It's really interesting to have this in the news at this particular time because we've been hearing the reports in the last couple of weeks about the dire water situation in Cape Town, South Africa. I know not necessarily international water, but an indication of the kinds of water situations the world is potentially facing, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. No, the scarcity that you're seeing there is happening all over the world, and of course is going to get worse. And what this cooperative is hoping to do is to help not just with those kinds of direct issues of scarcity, but also the political stresses that come about as a consequence.
So talk about that. I mean, are there lots of places where water supplies do cross or straddle, in the case of lakes, I guess, international boundaries?
Oh, yeah. It's about half the land surface of the Earth is in basins that are shared by two or more countries. So it's actually 310 transboundary watersheds and another 600-some-odd shared aquifers.
Wow. So we're even talking, when you talk about aquifers, we're talking about underground water supplies?
Correct.
All right. So what is how did the university's partnership form?
Well, so at OSU, we had a program in water conflict management and transformation for some years. And what we try and do there is look precisely at where water both is a cause of political tensions, but also can be used as a vehicle for dialogue, even across boundaries, hostile boundaries, even amongst people who don't like each other very much. And the Klamath is a great example of both the stresses in 2001 and then this elaborate agreement that was worked out over a 10-year period. So we've been trying to bring those two together and do mediation or do studies of early warning systems and so on at OSU. And what it turns out is that there are a number of different universities around the world that are doing similar things in their parts of the world. And so we finally see each other regularly, and over time we just realize that if we harness our collective forces, we'll be able to do a lot more for the world at large.
I was going to ask you if the American West is a particularly good place to study this, and you went right to the example of the Klamath Basin. So, yes, I think it was the answer there.
Absolutely. No, we've had study groups from all over the world come through Oregon, both to see where the hazards are, but also we have a really good record in Oregon of dialogue and working across both political boundaries and interest boundaries. To really bring interests together to work together.
But to stay with the Oregon example just a little further, it seems like we're pretty well along in things like surface water, but a lot been said the last couple of years about how little Oregon seems to know about groundwater and what the resources are there and wells mapping and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely. No, if uncertainty is definitely one of the issues that can cause political stresses, and groundwater is about as uncertain as you get. My first groundwater course, I remember the instructor saying, this is about as close to witchcraft as you get in the sciences.
In what respect?
Well, so I worked for the USGS a number of years ago as a groundwater scientist, and our first project was to try and figure out, we had a pesticide plume that was moving through an aquifer to a municipal well, and we were tasked with trying to find out how long it would take for that plume to hit that well. And it turned out that it would hit the well somewhere between 5 years from now and 50,000 years from now.
Okay. I could see where the guesswork gets involved here, yes.
Exactly right. So you can imagine if a lot of people are really concerned about their water, and especially if that had crossed political boundaries, that kind of uncertainty just leads to political uncertainty as well.
Aaron Wolf is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a professor of geography, environmental sciences, and marine resource management at Oregon State University in Corvallis. OSU is one of the founding members of the university's Partnerships for Water Cooperation and Diplomacy, introduced at the recent World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dr. Wolf, did you actually go to Davos?
I did indeed. Mm-hmm. It was quite an event. Now, I should say Davos works in concentric circles, so we were not in the inner circle. But we certainly got there and saw how beautiful it was and saw a lot of Mercedes with tinted windows.
So there was no bumping into people going, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. President," nothing like that.
Not quite. But there, no, it was an interesting group. And even in our little announcement, quite an interesting group of some CEOs of major corporations. The head of the International Union for the Conservation of Nature was there. The number two for the Swedish Development Corporation. This is an issue that people are really getting, that water stresses really do lead to tremendous political tensions, and conversely, water is a great vehicle for dialogue across the boundaries.
Are there just five universities still in the initial group?
These are the coordinating universities, and what we're doing now is just crafting out exactly how we want to work together, and really soon we'll be opening this up, because there are some, we count about 20 universities around the world where, with some level of capability of combining both the scientific and the political aspects of water, and so we're thinking eventually this will be about a 20-25 university partnership.
At the moment, it is Oregon State University, the German Kazakh University in Kazakhstan, the IHE Delft Institute for Water Education in the Netherlands, the Indian Institute of Technology Guwahati, and the University of Geneva in Switzerland. So that makes one university in all the Americas, and that's you.
Well, we have quite the expertise at OSU. I'd love to think it was me, but it's about 90 different faculties at OSU that are really good at water in all of its various aspects.
So, are you just far ahead of anybody else in the Americas at OSU in looking at water issues, both on a scientific and a political level?
Well, I think that's the trick, is universities don't work very well across disciplines. And I think it's what OSU does really well is the walls between disciplines are low. So you can have the political scientist and the hydrologist in the same room, along with people who know how to design processes where people learn to listen to each other and understand their shared values and shared interests. That's the culmination of expertise that you really need. And that's actually not just rare in the U.S. It's rare worldwide to allow those kinds of disparate expertises into the same room.
Now, when I look at the charter members of the university's partnerships for water cooperation and diplomacy, nobody in Africa and Australia, two of the drier parts of the world, I would think you're going to be looking for partners there.
We do. The University of Ghana we're talking to them to join the coordinating group. Australia is absolutely a wonderful case study and has no international rivers.
So, oh, sure.
That's the one benefit of being a big island unto yourself. But we absolutely use them as another case study of both the dangers of what happens when you run out of water. And also they've been leading now in helping to figure out paths forward in water-stressed countries.
So what are the places in the world, Aaron, where it seems like you're probably going to do some of the first work through these partnerships?
Right. So what we're doing is combining a scientific approach with a capacity building approach. And so where we look for the stresses in transboundary waters, in international waters, we generally look for somebody who wants to build something upstream and a downstream country isn't on board or is concerned about the impact. So if you look around the world, there are hot spots. Ethiopia is building a big dam on the Nile and Egypt is concerned about it. The same is going on in the Aral Basin, upstream dams and downstream concern. Most of the rivers of Asia have headwaters in China, and China, of course, needs power, and they're moving away from coal and trying to move towards, among other sources, hydropower, which means dams on a lot of rivers in Asia and downstream concerns about those. So that's the general setting where we look, and then what we try and do is help bring attention to the issue and also bring the right parties into a room where they can start to talk about how the dam might be managed cooperatively or how the impacts might be shared, both the benefits and costs might be shared across the borders.
Aaron Wolf, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, professor of geography, environmental sciences, and marine resource management at Oregon State University. One of the folks who recently traveled to Davos, Switzerland, to kick off the university's partnerships for water cooperation and Diplomacy involving Oregon State and four other universities around the world. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange to ask your questions, make your comments about progress on water issues across international boundaries. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I wonder if some of the same things that have been learned from dealing with water in the Western United States is also showing up there, where you've got competing uses for water for humans. You know, things like we need it for agriculture, we need it for drinking water. But then is anybody looking out for things like, well, what's going to happen to the fish when we build this gigantic dam upstream? Is that being discussed too?
Absolutely. I think the exact dynamic that we saw on the Klamath is playing out in the international stage in a lot of ways, and especially as countries develop. Countries like China, for example, 10 years ago were not thinking about the environment at all, and the rivers were basically sewers to take the waste away. And as countries develop, they increasingly become more environmentally conscious. And so recognizing, as you point out, that fish actually need water in the stream is something that is being raised increasingly in places like the Mekong or the Nile, whereas before, human survival was simply too risky and was taking precedent over the environment. Even a place, the Jordan Basin, for example, they ran out of water in 1970, and there's tremendous water stress amongst the human population. But the lower Jordan itself has now, people have argued for water in the lower Jordan for the environment, and using also the religious argument that it's such a critical place for so many faiths that you can't afford to let it become an open sewer.
I was going to ask you about the religious part of that, but my mind was on the Ganges. I hadn't considered the Jordan River, but this obviously comes into the political realm as well.
The Ganges is a great example. For years, the belief was because the Ganges is holy, it can't be polluted. And slowly and incrementally, people are making the case that because the Ganges is holy, it shouldn't be polluted. And that suddenly brings a lot of people out into environmental awareness who weren't there before.
So, Aaron, I mean, it seems like these partnerships might have formed a long time ago, or at least there might have been some UN agency that was looking at international water disputes. Is it just that this is a lot of brain power getting applied to it through universities for the first time?
Yeah, that's right. The World Bank, for years, they were involved in the Indus Basin in 1960, and then they really weren't for about 25 years. And now they're starting to become involved again. Their initiatives, the Dutch have an initiative, the Swiss have an initiative to try and do what we're calling water diplomacy, use water as a vehicle for dialogue. What they lack is exactly what universities can offer. If you really need to figure out what the hydrology is of a basin, or calculate what the benefits that might be shared, or do the research that helps facilitate dialogue, that's something that universities can do. And so we're hoping to be the one-stop shop where we can do the science, but we're also really good at bringing the right parties together. Universities generally have good names, so that you'll have a conference or a meeting in a university that's not as threatening as a formal political meeting. And the other thing we do really well is we teach. And so the skills that we're talking about, bringing an understanding of politics to the water sector and bringing an understanding of water to the political sector, these are the kinds of things that we can do at universities much better than anybody else.
Are there any big mysteries left in the world about where water comes from originally? I mean, this is not like the 19th century where we have expeditions looking for the source of the Nile anymore, right?
No, we know where it comes from and we know where it goes. We just don't know how much there is or when it's going to show up or what the quality of it is. And so I think, we in the U.S. are blessed to a degree on how much technology goes to figuring out our hydrology. But in a lot of the world, we don't have those kinds of gauging stations. The satellites aren't trained on the waterways. It's just a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the world at large. And so dealing with learning to manage even with great uncertainty is one of the things that we're hoping to get at.
You talked about how at Oregon State the walls between disciplines are fairly low, and it looks like you're trying to create something like that as well with the university's partnerships, I would think, where if a country has a question about a certain kind of thing, within the partnerships you would know, oh, well, this is something that Delft is really good at, or this is something that Oregon State is really good at. So here are the people you need to talk to over there.
That's exactly right. And also geographically, exactly. So a lot of my students are interested in waterways in Africa and Asia, for example. And the students really need to be connecting with each other now at this stage in their career. So that's part of what we're hoping to do is create a community of budding water champions, if you will, who are going to stay in touch with each other. And as you say, different universities have different sets of expertise, different sets of geographies that they're really good at. And so being able to pull these together, we think, is a profound benefit.
I can imagine, in addition to the excitement of the faculty members who help start the partnership like you, that you probably have some excited students as well.
We hope so.
So will this involve a lot of travel, or is it just going to be a lot of electronic communication between universities and governments?
Right. Well, we're thinking a little bit of both. We'd love to have a meeting of both the faculty who are interested in these issues and their students at least once every 2 years. A lot of us show up at some of the big professional meetings in any event, and so getting the chance to meet regularly would be useful. But nowadays, you don't need to get on a plane anymore to meet with each other. And, so we're thinking a lot of this is going to have to be electronic.
Sure. And I can imagine it's a fairly buoyant mood among partners. I mean, it's a fairly it's a serious subject matter, but you get a chance to use a lot of brain power at all your universities together.
Yeah. No, it's a really good group. And I got to say, I mean, I think in general, water people are generally good people. I mean, nobody gets into water for any of the wrong reasons. There's no money in it. There's no fame. So there's no ego and there's no big turf. And so the just getting together and thinking creatively without any of those limitations is really exciting intellectually.
Have some of the water battles of the American West, like within the Klamath Basin, as you cited, given you some good examples of what to do and what not to do when trying to pursue water agreements?
Yeah, I think our examples in the West are really examples of both the worst, but then ultimately the best. The fact that people across the political divide, across sectoral divides, I mean, ranchers and environmentalists and tribal members and urban people coming together on an agreement, Oregon's got a great record, and it's terrific to be able to tell that story.
Yeah, the world can learn about it more now through Oregon State University and its membership in the university's Partnerships for Water Cooperation and Diplomacy announced in Davos. Aaron Wolf, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Take care.